Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis, and on our best days, some insight even into the media issues of the week. And we are grateful to have you with us here as we launch into this from the studios of Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Always good to see your smiling face, Rex.
My smiling face. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and professor. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Very well, very good.
And very dignified.
Indeed. And Judy Patrick, a longtime editor of the Daily Gazette, now vice president of the New York Press Association.
I am anxious to see what's going to happen on the show today.
What is it? It's always interesting to see. We have a couple of letters that are coming back to us from last week's show, in which we talked about Alan interviewing the governor, and the governor himself spoke to Alan about this. Here's a story from Spectrum News. The cable news provider, Nick Reisman, who covers state government for Spectrum News, writes about how the press, he says, is chasing the shiny objects of the bail law and Medicaid, which faces a multi-billion dollar budget gap. This is apparently, Alan, what the governor said while on an interview with you. They follow the band, and the band is making news about Medicaid and bail reform, and he wants reporters to cover his trips outside the Capitol. Why don't you cover me, he said, when asked about his recent lack of news conferences in the ceremonial Red Room office on the second floor of the Capitol. That's what touched off this conversation last week. Why do you stay in this building, he's saying to the reporters, all the time? Why don't you come out and see real people and real events and show up at something? Thus spake the governor.
Seems like Chris is the only would-be journalist in that family. This is what's newsworthy.
Pay attention to me.
Well, the great thing about the governor that I think may be silly is that he does take on the press in, I think, a somewhat thoughtful way. And he doesn't like to take prisoners. And so what happens is he starts these fights. But my general view is, as is the age-old idea that you really can't get into a urinating fight with a skunk. You know what I mean? Because they'll get you every time.
The odd thing is he actually does do very well with the press. I don't understand why this animosity. I felt the same way about Hillary Clinton, who just had a distrust in eight of the press and so hurt herself. He does the same. He should be out there every day talking to reporters.
You know, I too would like to see the Capitol Press Corps look outside the walls of the state Capitol once in a while, but tagging along on the governor's dog and pony shows here and there to go snowmobiling, to drink the beer named after him, I don't think that serves the public greatly.
I agree with you. He once asked me to go kayaking with him on a river, and I said, absolutely not. He said, why not? I said, just because I'm not going.
I'm not gone on that one. That would be fun.
I wouldn't have trusted him, Alan.
He'd throw you overboard. Oops.
It's with great regret I announce.
It's really too bad. Actually, I think Judy's right. You don't want to go on with the dog and pony shows, but getting out of the niche in the Capitol is the right idea. When I, many, many years ago, when I covered state government, I thought I was the only reporter who knew people on the fourth floor of the Capitol. That's where the fiscal staffs had their offices of the Assembly Ways and Means Committee, Senate Finance. And you would never see reporters up there. The reporters are on the third floor with offices between the Assembly and Senate chambers, and the second floor is where the governor's offices are. And so that just actually gave me access to a whole different crowd of sources for information that other people didn't have. And I don't think we should, as a group, just condemn Capitol reporters, but I do think it's easy for any of us who cover a beat to get into the rhythm of the beat and the same people every day, and to convince yourself as a reporter that you're doing your job if you just cover the events that come in front of you.
Well, I really like what you're saying. And, you know, what really ticked me off the other day that started this whole thing was that a reporter suggested that because he was doing these interviews with me, nobody should quote WAMC or his time with me. And I really thought that was outrageous.
And, of course, it hasn't happened. WAMC is everywhere.
Yeah. Including in his news stories.
Yeah, so as I said at the time, if you'll recall, I think it was much ado about nothing, Alan, because I don't think that reporter was going to not cover a news story just because it happens to have been said. What his point was that the governor should do more interacting with the reporters who are covering him every day, who want to have access to him for these conversations. Then they don't get it. So that, I think, is a valid criticism.
Well, I went out of my way the next time I talked to him to say, why don't you have more Red Room press conferences? Mm-hmm. Because I thought that was correct. But the idea that a reporter, and an influential one, by the way, would say, don't quote WAMC, and he said it specifically, I thought that was really dumb.
So when you asked the governor about why he didn't have more Red Room news conferences, didn't he say they should just come along on the dog and pony shows?
He did.
So yeah, he didn't really answer the question.
He didn't answer the question.
He didn't.
So what did you say to follow up?
I don't remember, to be honest with you. But but the point was, I did ask, and I asked for a specific reason, because I do believe that press conferences are important. But what I don't believe in is a bunch of people sitting around griping at each other that the world isn't fair.
You know, and
name
in their,
names.
And in their defense, their job is a lot harder nowadays, because if they want to really talk to anybody, they've got to go through three levels of PR approval to be able to even talk to anyone. We used to be able to go out and actually talk to foresters, DEC inspectors. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they can't do that. So they spend a lot of their time just running around waiting for some flack to give them approval to talk
to
someone.
Good point. I also remember Mario was very accessible. People want to talk to Mario. If they didn't talk to him and if they mentioned his name in one line on a local yokel newspaper, he would call them up.
He was accessible to a fault. He would sometimes say, oh, no, not him again. Because he was constantly calling reporters down to his office to spin things the way he wanted them spun, of course. And every time that happened, then you had to go to all these other people to say, wait, this is what the governor said. Is that right? And try to confirm it from other people and get an alternative point of view.
The whole issue of access to public officials for journalists is a fraught one. In the Kennedy days, to go way, way back, journalists knew of his faults, of his pain, his health problems, and of his womanizing problem, and they hid all that for the right to have access to him at any time. So was it worth it? Well, we see now when we don't have access to the president or largely to the governor, what's the result? They're not happy. They think their stories are not being covered as Cuomo plainly does, and we have to work in different ways to get our story. I still don't think I would exchange access for truth-telling. I think that's the bottom line of the experience over the past, whatever it is, 16
years. And not to prolong this agony. I just think somebody made a terrible mistake in saying nobody should quote WAMC because he's not doing Red Room conferences. I think that's just wrong.
All right. That has been recorded. Here's another piece of mail from Patricia, who says, it's always a good day when Ira Fussfeld is on the air. This is referring to last week's show. Just wanted to acknowledge how delightful it was to hear him on this week's program. Not only is he intelligent, knowledgeable, and articulate, I love his voice. Thanks, WAMC and Dr. Chartok, for providing such a great program. That's us, folks. And leading such great broadcasting system. Don't know what I would do. Thank you, Patricia, in Vermont. How about that? That's a good thing.
I think it's important that you recognize that that letter came from Vermont, where WAMC housed in Albany, but going to large parts of Vermont is the preferred radio outlet for so many Vermonters.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that something? And we are always grateful to get your point of view, media@wamc.org. media@wamc.org. So the question that the governor raised about reporters pursuing shiny objects, in his case, he was saying that reporters are spending too much time covering the issue of the state budget deficit, the Medicaid problem.
I don't think the VAT is a shiny object, do you?
They followed the ban. The ban is making
like
news about and bail reform. Why are we
writing
about bail reform, which is the issue that is at this point seemingly dividing the New York State Democrat-controlled Assembly from the New York State Democrat-controlled Senate. So is that a valid criticism? Are we too keen to follow one major story at a time? How real is that criticism?
You know, reporters do get stuck on a certain story because it's easier. They know all the background. They can just re-up it. But in some respects, it gives you the kind of in-depth reporting that people are always asking for.
So what about on the national level, then? Is the shiny object the Democratic debates? Are we spending too much time paying attention to that and talking about that?
Not last night's. or the one for this weekend, as you are listening. Yes, as we speak, it was last night. Bloomberg's entry into it and the ascendancy of Bernie Sanders certainly made that notable. You know, whenever someone says you're covering this and leaving this uncovered, I am suspicious. And if you look at the governor's complaint, it's that we haven't covered marijuana. Excuse me, have you looked at the paper, listened to TV, listened to radio over the past year? Of course we have covered that. What he means is you're doing too much news that's negative to me. And I think Trump is a different problem. Trump really is. It's hard to tell what's a distraction from a new outrage. And I think that we've gone too far to try to only cover one thing at a time. And that leaves him free to do lots of other bad things in the background.
It's really hard, though, isn't it? When you have
really
so many stories that any one of them on their own would be, in another era, a huge lead the paper headline. And it's very hard for us not to be so taken by the latest outrage from Washington, and everybody talks about it.
Plus,
right?
I think we risk just overdosing our audiences. They just can't take anymore. They're tired of it, and that is certainly not our intent.
But we do tend to follow the audience to some degree. Over where I live in Berkshire County, the question of PCB removal has come up once again. GE wants to put it to bed finally and wants to bury it in a burial site, the leftover PCBs. And it's gotten quite a few endorsements from politicians and others, but boy, the people are angry. They don't want PCBs being buried near them. And the letters to the editor are just one after another, after another, after another. So sometimes you take notice when you're a journalist, right, of what people want to hear about.
You know, I've come to hate debates. I think they're an artificial construct created by the networks to gin up audience interest. I don't think they're serving the public at all. They're not educating anybody, and they're just almost freak shows. And then you get the build up ahead of time. Who's going to come out fighting? Who's going to get the first jab in? And what do the polls say? I mean, this whole poll debate, whole scenario is really not good for an informed electorate.
You know, I'm really glad you raised this. I watched the resume, because I get up at 1:32 in the morning, and CNN did a great job of having the major points that each of the candidates made. But when I heard it on NPR the next morning, it was as if it was a different debate in a different place. One really understands, I've argued this with you guys for years, which is that the press, depending on which outlet you listen to, can be quite prejudiced.
And did you really learn anything from the debate?
Well, I don't know what the alternative is to doing this. I think it's great to get the candidates out there so that you can see how they react. What would be the alternative if you didn't have a debate that had Michael Bloomberg challenged by Elizabeth Warren standing right next to him? You would then only have Michael Bloomberg in his $400 million of advertising campaigns. That would be the image of him that is the only one left. Instead, at least the debates give you a chance to see how these people perform, let's say, sorry for the term, but what do you do without debates? How else do you get these candidates out there and exposed?
People say, readers and listeners say, oh, we want to hear their position on issues, but they really don't. Those stories are not read. We know that from social media. They do want to see drama. They say, oh, there's too much horse racing, but that's the first thing anyone asks, who's ahead in the polls? What they say they want and what they actually look at are two different things. I don't know what the alternative is. I've looked at political coverage for decades now. Theodore White did the best job when he wrote books, and he did that after the fact, when he could go back and write about everything in depth. And that is not journalism, that's history.
We're so far from the Lincoln and Douglas debates that people talk about, which were hours and hours of conversation in depth, yes, over many days. We have a different attention span. Society is so different that now I don't know how you reach contemporary Americans with the limited attention span that we have, with the busy lives that we have, without something that has a little bit of built-in drama, as in the debates. Right?
You know what CNN has been doing, Rex? In addition to the well-attended debates, they've been interviewing people at great length, each one on a different night.
The town hall meetings. Yeah. MSNBC has done that as well.
That's right.
Yep.
And so you really get an idea of what their positions on certain things are.
Yeah, they're great. I don't think they draw as much of an audience, though, you know, as the full panel of debates.
Well, it's the difference between a boxing match and, you know, elocution lesson.
And as we were saying, it's the difference between a one-on-one conversation like you have with the governor and Red Room press conferences. Same kind of an issue, right? The press conference gets you a lot of information quickly, as a debate does, whereas a one-on-one gives you a chance to really settle in a little bit, hopefully.
So this has come about, this reluctance of politicians to use the old forms, the press conference and the formal statements, because of social media. And really, Trump, I blame him for this too. Why does he have to deal with us in the media, who he has problems with, when he can go directly to how many millions of Twitter followers?
Mm-hmm. 60, I think.
Yeah, way more than any of the individual media that he has to deal with can reach.
Hmm. It is difficult. And there are certain stories, though, that, as you were saying before, listeners will always be able to say, well, but you didn't do this story, or you, the reporters didn't focus on this. And that is true. You could claim that in the presidential debate before Las Vegas, there wasn't enough specific conversation about, say, climate change, the existential threat of that. There was too much theatric and not enough substance.
Well, you know, some of the so-called Bernie bros, the followers of Bernie, have been getting an awful lot of criticism for being too mean, which raises the question, and certainly I've been on the receiving end of some of that. I don't think I deserve it, but I have. And Bernie himself has had to say, I don't want it. On the other hand, how much does the press get lobbied, if you want that as a better word, you know, by people who are on one side or the other and keep complaining that the press isn't doing a good job?
It happens all the time. You get a 100 calls about, this candidate said this, why didn't you put it on the front page, or why didn't you lead the news with it?
You think it's organized, Judy?
Sometimes it is, especially during election season. I can remember when the Tea Party was hot and going, and the Tea Party advocates knew the numbers of all the local media and called them frequently.
Mm-hmm. To their point, we did not perceive what a big deal the Tea Party was going to be. I remember the first Tea Party event in Albany, which seemed to have been organized by a talk radio guy from WGY. And I thought that this was just a passing fancy, that it was just something to promote his radio station. And Tea Party became a big deal, obviously, and the effects of it linger.
It's changed governance.
It right. certainly has.
No more compromise, no more dealing with the other side, and lack of civility. It all dates back to that, a backlash to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it faded a little bit, and then it rose rose again through the Trump campaign.
And one of the products is now the Secretary of State. You know, Mike Pompeo is a guy whose career rose as a result of the Tea Party. So these political movements, it is hard to cover them appropriately, not to overwhelm readers and give too much credence to something that is just a flash in the pan, that's just a demonstration. And yet you have to pay attention to what is really a current that is underneath. Something that's going
movements
on.
Are not easy to cover. Remember the Wall Street protests of a few years ago? That there were no leaders. That was their avowed method, that they were going to all be equal. And the press did not know what the heck to do with that. Who do you talk to? How do you explain this to people? We did a terrible job with that.
It's hard, because especially in the New York Capital Region, because I will have people complain to me that, well, we had 300 people at this demonstration and you didn't cover it. And I said, well, you can get 300 people at a demonstration in Albany with nothing. You know, you can bring a 6,000 people by buses, and that's a little bit more impressive. And yet, sometimes a groundswell that yields a few hundred people is actually a big deal.
The decisions are harder to make now, when newspapers especially, but all media, have fewer resources. You are making much harder decisions. Before, you would have said 300 people, okay, we'll go take a look. Now you're not. You don't have somebody to go take the look.
Right. Right.
So we're playing into the hands of politicians who are saying, pick and choose your story, and pick mine.
Pick mine, pick mine. Anyway, okay, some controversy by a journalist who is now retired. That is, once a journalist, are you always a journalist? The journalist in question is Sam Donaldson. He has been retired for 7 years. This is a guy who was the ABC News White House correspondent, a very well-known journalist through the Reagan years, through the Clinton
Nixon
presidency.
And especially the Nixon years.
Is that right?
Especially, sure. He was a big, you know, question about Watergate. He was aggressive and...
My goodness. Anyway, Sam Donaldson now has endorsed Mike Bloomberg for president and is drawing some criticism, because while it's true that as a journalist he never registered with the political party, now he says he's in retirement and he can speak up because, quote, there's too much at stake in the next election to remain silent. What do we think? Should he be doing this, or do you give that up once you become a journalist?
Damn right he has a right to do it. I mean, he's retired. He's not working for an official place. He just wants everybody to know what he's thinking. And I'm all for him. I think it's great.
Yeah, when I left Daily Journalism, I started speaking out. And when I went back in to go overseas, I was not covering Trump, and I love speaking out. The odd thing is, it didn't have as much effect as maybe we think it did. I asked my college media law and ethics class, you know, if they knew who Sam Donaldson was and what they thought. Not a single hand went up.
You know, I think
assume we are forgotten.
Boy, are you
I'm
right.
saying he was wrong, because he says too much at stake not to say anything. I think the media has too much at stake not to work as hard as we can to preserve our credibility with the public. And this just took we took a hit with it. I mean, Sam Donaldson was a high profile challenger of people in power, and he was out there day in and day out challenging people, and people would at the time would say he is a liberal. And certainly he can vote for whoever he wants, and he is retired, but did he add that much to the debate? No. We would have been far better off if he just kept his mouth shut.
Well, you know, certainly I take great objection to that, Judy. I truly think that we're all citizens. There are a lot of people who don't vote, journalists who don't vote, because they don't want to even go into a voting booth.
Not a lot, but a few.
But some, yeah. We've seen them right here on this program in the past. So to me, who better than somebody who really knows what's going on to speak on it? I mean, you know, you can have Louis the bartender speaking on it, but you have a guy who covered it all and saw it all. I think it's terrific that he's doing it.
So he knows history, but what does he know about what's happening now?
What, you think you lose your acumen?
He was day in and day out in the White House 20 or 30 years ago, but he's not there now.
No.
So he doesn't have a special vantage point. He just has the weight of his celebrity from years and years ago.
Well, in that case, then I think you're even wronger than I thought you were. Because he saw the way that it operated. He knows that the White House is the White House, and he's doing his thing.
The White House isn't the White House anymore. Everything's changed. You can't judge what's happening now based on what happened 30 years ago.
Judy, that's his point exactly.
Right. That's my point exactly.
Well, then that's everybody. There we go.
We agree.
Let's all join in.
Kumbaya. Anyway, an interesting controversy. Tell us your thoughts. Media at WAMC.org. We were talking a moment ago about reader reaction sometimes being harsh. Here actually is some research to back that up. A reporter named Andrea Martin, pursuing a master's degree at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, who set out to find out about the experience of journalists when engaging with audiences online, surveyed journalists from 23 local newspapers across the United States, and found that more than 90% had encountered or experienced incivility from newspapers' online audience. That's a violation of norms, a lack of respect for other people. The next question was, what is the connection between that and the perspective on the national media presented by the president? 71% of the respondents said they definitely saw a connection, a rise in that, after Trump's statements about the national media and the correlation that is between the president's rhetoric and online attacks of journalists.
And the attacks were basically supportive of the president? Is that what you're implying?
Yeah, basically, well, they were uncivil. It was supportive in texture, let's say.
Well, you know, newspapers are great. Before they print a letter, often, but not always, they check the authenticity of the letter. They go to somebody and they say, did you write this letter? Whereas this new online stuff could get really hairy, and they can start writing you letters. I work for the Berkshire Edge. I write for them twice a week. And in each case, we've had some terrible letters coming to the editor, unsigned. And so he has established New York Times rules. You know, you better sign your name, and you better be who you say you are. And to me, that's correct.
These are attacks on you for
yes.
what you've written? Yeah. That's the thing that we're seeing. You know, Gail King of CBS This Morning, for example, and a reporter at the Washington Post named Felicia Somas, raised questions about Kobe Bryant's rape allegation. You remember the 2003 case after his death?
She got death threats.
Fast and furious.
Right.
Gail King got such a pushback. And that kind of thing is on a much less violent scale, at least. But you get that kind of reaction in the local media as well. You're
sure.
getting just this kind of nasty pushback whenever you write something or say something that people find objectionable.
It's cowardly. When you really think about it, it's cowardly when you don't sign your name, when you say terrible things. And there's been some pushback on that policy, but I don't care.
And it's particularly vicious for female journalists, from what I've seen. It's brutal. The
misogyny and hatred.
Yeah, from physical appearance to sexual, it's horrible. And, you know, the companies themselves, are the media companies themselves, are in part to blame for this, because what we do is we encourage everybody to get out there, to tweet, to engage with your audience, and then the audience comes back and bites us big time.
Well, this goes back also to whether Donald Trump is modeling this behavior when he calls out and threatens journalists at his rallies. Yes. He's made it okay to be anti-Semitic, anti-female, anti-black, anti-any minority you want to name. And this is another manifestation of it. And of course, his supporters will say, oh, no, you can't blame him for what we all are thinking.
Is that then what was the question raised of Bernie Sanders? Are you not responsible for your people's comments? Every political reporter covering this race knows that incivility, it is in all the campaigns, but most especially the Sanders supporters,
frankly,
are the people who are having that kind of reaction.
And they're comparing his answers, of course, to the president's, which are, oh, there's wrongdoing on all sides. Well, as you point out, not so much among others as yours.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Well, we've run out of time, and that should be
a
controversial topic for people to comment on, media@wamc.org. Yeah, that's all. So sorry about that. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to David Gustina, our producer, and we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, 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 ding-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.